All order the House Revenue Committee. Welcome everybody here on a lovely Friday morning. Glad to see you here. And today we have some invited testimony on the subject of the interrelationship between tax policy and economic development and climate for job creation and investment. I think, as I mentioned yesterday, we'll be doing some of these sector kind of briefings as we get into the session here. We'll be hearing from local governments. We'll be hearing, I think, from labor next week or week after. I forget when we've got that. But today is all about economic development and the relationship between tax policy and what we're trying to accomplish on economic development. So we have Jim Craven, Duncan Wise was invited, not here. Joe Schwinger, he's on the road. J.L. Wilson, Paul Phillips et al., and Lynn Lundquist. I think that covers what we've got on the list for today. Is that right?
Yes.
We don't have any particular order. Anybody, you guys want to arm wrestle for who goes first? Joe, you're moving. Come on up. All right. We've got no bills in front of us. This is pure policy discussion today.
We welcome that, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Joe Schweinhart, Associate Oregon Industries. For the record, Associate Oregon Industries is Oregon's largest and oldest business association. We're over 107 years old with 22,000 members. Appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. Before I start, I would like to take a moment just to thank the legislators and legislature for their diligent efforts from last session. Work on such items as energy restructuring, the inheritance tax, and the extension of unemployment benefits are greatly appreciated. Where is Oregon business today? If you read a recent Statesman Journal, you have a pretty good idea. 122,000 jobs lost over the last 2 years. In those 2 years, we've seen a decline in business revenues, a decline in capital gains revenues, businesses failing, layoffs by the thousands. We have seen more manufacturing going overseas and a continued migration of capital gains profits moving to Vancouver, getting away from Oregon's high capital gains tax. We have also seen an escalated frustration with business about business regulation and land use laws. Although you read about the economy, you read about the U.S. economy slowly making its way out of the recession, Oregon still lags behind. We have the highest unemployment, next to the highest now, unemployment in the U.S., one of the highest energy costs in the Northwest. Weyerhaeuser reports to us that PGE has their highest rates for their company sites, one of the highest minimum wages in the U.S., the second highest capital gains in the U.S. Is business hurting? Is Oregon's economy still in trouble? You bet they are. But we say this is 2003. Things are getting better. But we can't really say that. Let me read some of the headlines since the first of the year about business. Portland. The Portland area lost 2,800 jobs in December. Airline executives think 2003 will be another deficit year. Kmart is closing hundreds of stores. Bank of Astoria, 2002 income down 17%. Canadian furniture retailer closing 34 Northwest stores. Continued hemorrhage of manufacturing job threatens nation's economic leadership. Recession leaving losses in its wake. Northwest businesses fight an uphill battle for recovery. Sluggish market forces Oregon Steel to lay off 300 in Portland. Losses mounting, capital a Crown Pacific weighs its option of moving its headquarters out of Portland. Red ink flows at Pope and Talbot. Venture investment continues to decline. Hillsboro-based chip company Lattice Semiconductor, fourth quarter loss, $127 million. Loan losses, severance costs drag down Pacific Continental earnings. And Oregon gets mediocre scores in a development study. We are still in serious economic times. It's about business, and it's about the tax revenue it generates. The state budget is lacking private sector revenues and is faltering. Difficult decisions will have to be made. Raising taxes is not the answer, and we can no longer go on as business as usual. Oregon's climb back to the top of the economic mountain will not be easy. Steps must be taken now to ease the economic pain so we can grow in the future. Oregon must plan now for improving the economy in the short and long term. AOI has the following list of recommendations. Not all of them we have, but a short list. First of all, state government must get its house in order. Reform PERS and the Oregon Health Plan now. These plans should be affordable to the employers, and taxpayers are looking for accountability. They want effective government, not more government. Streamline the development process and implement regulatory certainty for business. If Oregon is to grow and expand, we need your help in this area. Ensure a fair and reasonable rate process for customers before the PUC. No more four-week notice, 50% price increases. Continue to improve funding for schools. Pre-K through 12 budgets need to be constructed to meet student education needs first, a basic premise of any school system, and decrease non-instructional expenditures. In the area of taxation, taxes, by a poll of our members as well as business in general, taxes are the single most detrimental deterrent to business growth. It is also the top problem that we have experienced recently. A few specific recommendations are, one, capital gains must be reduced if business to have growth capital and attract new business. This would also reduce the legislature's dependence on this very unstable fund. Research and development, R&D tax credits, must be increased. Oregon's credit is extremely low. If high-tech, biotech, any other tech-driven business is going to locate in Oregon, stay in Oregon, or expand in Oregon, we must have changes. The pollution control tax credits have been very successful in keeping business in Oregon. They should be extended. Oregon also needs their bridges and roads repaired. An increase in revenues is a must to meet this critical need. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, economic development is on the list of every state in the union trying to climb out of the recession. It gives you an indication of some of the issues we are facing. The businesses face tough survival issues from within every day, especially in downsizing and deciding which plant to close. If Oregon can prove it is business friendly, if it can demonstrate that government and business can work together to add jobs and promote economic growth, then the decision will be made to close the plant in Georgia or Texas, not Oregon. The legislature and the governor must work to put people back to work and restore consumer confidence. Oregon, the Oregon economy needs help. I've said it once and I'll say it again. Remember, business is a horse that pulls the economic cart. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, things are tough out there. They're tough out there for business. We see parts of the country moving. We don't see Oregon moving like the other parts of the country. We think Oregon is first in too many categories, and it's going to be very difficult to sell our economic agenda. It's going to be hard to sell getting more industry here and keeping industry here if we continue on the road of more or less looking to push business away from us. So we need to be more business friendly. And those are my remarks. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Joe. Questions for Joe?
I have one, and maybe Joe, this will be a question for the panel, for you and for others too. And this is again just kind of the big global picture here. Obviously, tax burden has a significant impact on the attractiveness of the state to economic development and job growth and investment. And so is the tax structure. So that means
sure.
Structure, and you've got burden as well. Clearly, an adequate level of public services has a lot to do with it too. And you've got the New York Times on the front page about the Portland schools, the Oregon schools knocking off days after days off the year. That doesn't create a very positive image of Oregon for business that's looking for a spot in the country to locate. So there's a balance there somewhere between tax burden and level of public service. And the federal government has the great advantage of being able to deficit spend so that they can stimulate the economy by going into deficit for a period of time, because so much of the stimulus takes more than 2 years to have any effect, and so they can sustain a period of deficit while the seeds of this economic stimulus take root and grow. We can't do that. How do you manage? It's just, and it's not a fair question, because if you knew the answer, you'd probably be sitting up here or else in the office upstairs. How do we manage that at the state level, where we have a biennial budget that has to address not only economic development and some of those long-term strategies that may require short-term reductions in revenue in order to make the state attractive to business, while at the same time being able to maintain a level of public services that doesn't work counterproductive to the economic development strategy that we're trying to implement on the revenue system side? That seems to me to be the conundrum that we've got ourselves wrapped around in what I fear may be a declining cycle here, and again, largely limited by our inability to deficit spend. We have to balance, and if we make cuts in revenue, then we have to offset those cuts in revenue with cuts in programs and services, so the books balance at the end of every 2 years. And that's hard to build those long-term revenue strategies and still maintain those services in the meantime that you also need to create that positive economic climate. That's a long question, but it seems to me to be the one that if we could figure out the answer to, we could all wrap up business and go home. So I won't repeat the question for each one. That's why I took a little bit of time to say it. But that's what I'd like to try and figure out, where that balance is between tax policy and level of public service, and how we make those two work within the constraints of our constitutional balanced budget requirement.
Mr. Chairman, you're right. I mean, it really is a kind of a catch-22. You don't have any revenues now, but at the same time, you're down in the bucket, and you've got to climb out. What we're looking at from AOI standpoint is realizing that business revenues are down, and there's not much going on out there, and realizing that hopefully the economy will start to improve. We're looking at trying to do something, and what you all need to look at is, one, obviously you have to balance the budget. You have to make that work. Two, we want funding for K through 12 also. We think it's important to keep those standards high. At the same time, realizing that it's the private sector revenues, tax revenues, that drive this thing. So you've got to increase those if you want those out years. And what we're saying and what we're hoping is that in 03, 05, we're looking, what our proposals are what we're looking for is some type of start. And I'll take the capital gains tax, for instance. We're not looking for any decrease in capital gains in 03, but we want a half point in 04. But what we want you to do is approve a point in 05, 06, and 07 with the understanding, and again, not knowing all the answers, but hoping in those years our economy will begin to increase. As that increase happens, that business will be able to take advantage of those cuts and grow with it here in Oregon. The other part of this conundrum gets to be in the overall Oregon economy. You want Economic Development Department to go out and sell Oregon, but when you go out there and you got the highest energy costs, you got the highest capital gain, you got the highest income tax, it's hard to walk out and say, gosh, come to Oregon, we're business friendly. So it, and I wish I had all the answers, I don't. But that's the type of thing you need to wrestle with, because if you walk out of here without doing anything, we're not going to get much better very fast, and we're already behind the eight ball because a lot of the country is already moving. And we think it's important to get that private sector going, to get those tax revenues in again, because that's where it's at. That's the best answer I can.
Representative Hess.
Joe, I'm with you on all of these economic development incentives, and I think they're helpful, but those economic development tools, to me, pale in comparison to this economic development disaster that we have with Portland becoming this shaving 24 days off. It wasn't just the New York Times, Mr. Chair. It was national news yesterday. It was a Good Morning America. And we have in the Trade Committee today someone coming in who did a story, who did a study for your organization a couple of years ago, I think it was before you got there, from Willamette University, on the reasons that companies do relocate or expand. And when they did that survey, the Willamette University study found that, yes, taxes, capital gains, those things are important, but not as important as amenities and quality of life and education. So I guess the question is similar to Representative Shetterly's in. What do you propose then, in addition to some of these things, in terms of trying to shore up some of those things that actually do draw businesses or keep businesses into a place like where we want to keep them, which is our state?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Haas, our business membership, and we're 98% small business, tells us that tax policy is the most detrimental thing we're facing. Yes, Oregon is a great place to live, and Oregon has a lot of amenities. But guess what? So does Austin, Texas. So does Kansas City. So does Indianapolis. And it's a question of what you're looking for. So when you're locating a business, yes, you want a great place for your employees, and you want a great place to locate. But I guarantee you the bottom line in business is profits. And there's a lot of great places to live. But when you have a business come to Oregon and you start taking, every time they make money, you're taking it away from them, it doesn't work. And they're going to look elsewhere. And there's a lot of great places out there. Oregon's a great place. And I'm sure that study indicated that Oregon was one of the best places. And I think from time to time, Portland goes on that list of the best cities to live. But the bottom line for businesses is they can't survive unless they're making money. And when you're taxing them out of that profits, they're going to go elsewhere.
Joe, I wonder if AOI has looked a little further back at how we got here. I mean, obviously, we didn't just get here overnight. And I don't think that the recession being deeper in Oregon should be of any surprise to anybody. We have failed to diversify. We have danced around and in exuberance over certain areas of the state being profitable, while others were not profitable and overregulated, and businesses were absolutely unable to move. We have them still unable to move in the permitting process on the South Coast. And so I think that there should be some analysis about if we're going to get Oregon in a business-friendly condition, we need to look at why we have put ourselves in this position, in putting all of our eggs into one basket. Different businesses are cyclical, and I met with the new director of the Oregon Economic Development Department recently, and I quoted the little poem to it. You remember, I have a little shadow that moves in and out with me. What's the good of use of him? It's more than I can see. That's Texas and Georgia and Kansas City and Indianapolis. These are the people that offer it all. So we have a competitor that we need to actually physically see and understand. I also believe in my years, in the last 20 years of working in economic development and being frustrated with the decline in it in the South Coast, that the amenities and a lot of things are conducive, but it's also the people that present it to the business and how it is presented to them. And if you have a decent tax structure, or if you have the amenities, unless you can sell them on as a salesman, you're not going to do it. Has AOI looked at some of these things that have built up to get to this point?
Not to anything formally, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman Berger. Nothing formally. There's been a lot of discussions on how we got here. I think I'm probably singing to the choir here, but, you know, the booming 90s, and nobody was worried about it. Everybody was making money. Yeah, it wasn't working. Everything wasn't great, but everybody was still making money. I think when the crunch comes, everybody starts like, well, what happened? You know, you like wake up and say, what happened? Why are we in this situation? And I think we spent a lot more money on government. Business spent a lot more money as they were expanding and they were making money. So it was, you know, good times are here. Now the good times aren't here. And there's a lot of suffering going on, whether it's private sector or public sector. and we have to find a way to get out of it. And we have not done a formal study on it. But there's probably a lot of reasons why we're here. That's not just one.
Representative Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe, I mean, talking a little bit about the past and how we got here and where we're headed, and I don't remember. I mean, one of the things, obviously, that I and others worked for was the support of and development of a rainy day fund at some point along the way during that great go-go period of the 90s. And I don't remember. Was AOI in support of a rainy day fund?
Mr. Yeah, Chairman, Representative
former Representative Lundquist will probably remember that.
Yeah.
Joe wasn't with him then.
I wasn't here. I honestly don't remember. I know we generally would support such a situation depending on what the revenue situation is. And we have supported other revenue sources in the past fairly strongly to try to stabilize funding in the state. But I couldn't give you I didn't even guess.
Well, let me ask you this, if I can, Mr. Chair, if I can continue a little bit. You mentioned two things that, along with the list of the reductions in capital gains and research and development tax credits and pollution control tax credit support, all of which I generally support to the extent we were going to do some sort of a broad overhaul of the way we do taxes in this state. I think that those would have to be, in my own mind, important elements of that. But I didn't hear you talk at all about any of the how we balance those decisions against the need for some sort of more stabilized revenue system. And I guess I'm interested in your, if we went down that road, like I think we ought to do, for example, and reduce capital gains tax credits and, you know, promote research and development and do some of those things, also realizing that in the kind of economy we're in now, we know that our complete reliance on the personal income tax being 87% of the general fund is the wrong way to structure a tax system. What does AOI have in mind for that? I mean, are you guys on board with some other broadening of a tax process that shares the burden fairly and stabilizes the system? Because if we take all out of one side, Joe, to promote overall the long-term economic development of the state, we aren't in this deficit spending situation like Representative Shetterly pointed out, and we need some broad-based tax stability. So what's AOI's position on that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Williams, we've talked about situations like that. Obviously, we've supported the sales tax numerous times as a way to get to help stabilize that funding and change other funds. The voters have obviously said they don't want it. Do you bring it up again and try it again? You guys are going to have to decide that. I don't know. I think we would support it if you did, depending on what the balance was on the other side. If we have some type of looking at, you know, how that plays out to stabilize funding. I don't know if there's any easy answers. I think one thing you have to look at is we're always talking about cutting funds. We're always talking about trying to balance budgets. But at the same time, if you can do something with capital gains, you do something with R&D, you're going to bring more money in. You're going to jumpstart the economy, which will bring more tax revenues in. And I don't know what the exact numbers are on something like that. I guess it's kind of hard to figure. But what you're doing, yes, you do have to balance the budget. But, yes, why you're doing that is so in the future you bring more money in, stabilize growth in business, and keep those revenues coming. How do you balance that? Get back to your question. I don't know. It's a tough question because I think obviously sales tax looms large on the horizon as a possible fix. I think you have to look at trying first to get some type of basic government structure where everybody can live with this is how we can do it most efficiently. And then look, and like I said, in the future years, of saying, okay, now let's do something to grow the economy. Let's do something to get business started so when the economy starts to pick up, Oregon business can pick up and be some type of an advantage at that point, or at least equal to other states so they can bring companies in, keep companies here, and start growing and growing the tax revenue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let's move on. Joe, I appreciate your comments. I hope you'll stick around. The reason I say it, I think this is a theme that we... Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Frey, you had a question for Joe.
You know,
go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And Representative Williams really covered the bulk of my question, but I will say one thing. In response to Representative Berger, you know, you talked about diversity and how we like diversity in this state, and we certainly do. You know, we choose every possible avenue that we can to disincent people from locating or staying in Oregon. We do it through permitting, we do it through land use restrictions, and we do it by sitting by and watching our greatest resource, forest land, systematically be closed down. Representative Berger, in your district, is a very large state forest. Representative Hopkins, in your district, in my home county, there's a very large state forest that are essentially closed to using the renewable resource. I mean, we have to look at what we have and take advantage of what we have, and as we do that, then we will we'll attract other people to the state. So, thank you, Representative Williams, for asking my question.
All right. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Appreciate the comments and sharing our pain. We share yours. Jim Craven, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record.
I'm sorry, before you start, Duncan Wise, Lynn Lundquist, would you give Duncan my question so he can be thinking about it? He missed the question.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Craven, representing the Oregon Council of the American Electronics Association. AEA is the nation's largest trade association representing the high-tech sector. We have about 3,800 companies nationwide and about 180 companies here in Oregon. I do want to start by saying that despite perhaps the perception out there, the high-tech industry does remain a vital part of Oregon's economy. Like almost every other sector in Oregon, we've had a very rough 2 years. In the past year, we've probably lost somewhere on the order of 5,000 to 6,000 jobs in the high-tech sector, mainly in the manufacturing parts of that sector. The software part of the industry remains relatively strong, and we do have some growing sectors in the area of cybersecurity, firms that are addressing the issues of security of the internet, secure transactions. We have one of the nation's largest concentrations of experts in digital display technology. Companies like InFocus and Wilsonville continue to be market leader in digital displays, though I noticed we did not buy their product when we redid these hearing rooms.
What was the headline yesterday in InFocus, though?
They had a bit of a loss, fourth quarter, which just demonstrates the continued difficulty. When I talk to the high-tech executives in Oregon, they rarely talk about the issue being Oregon. The issue is the global economy for these players, because that's where they play. The issue is not really state-to-state comparisons. The issue is my company, wherever it's located, versus all other companies everywhere. And that's the environment in which they attempt to survive. I think as I really have one message today on the topic of the relationship of tax structure to economic development, and that's, as we have discussions throughout the rest of the session in this room and elsewhere, excuse me, that we remember to focus on what actually is the Oregon economy, and that we not make decisions based upon sort of theoretical constructs of, well, if we did this, this would happen, but to remember what is the basis of Oregon's economy, and that is an export-based, so-called traded sector economy that has strengths in high-tech, lumber and wood products, agriculture, metals, transportation equipment, and such. Economist Joe Courtwright, who used to work here in the building, did a presentation a couple days ago saying that when you look at all state economies or all local economies around the United States, there's a great commonality for about two-thirds of what happens. Everybody has restaurants. Everybody has hairdressers. Everybody has shoe stores. Everybody has a certain amount of government and all the rest. What makes the difference in whether a state moves forward or declines is the sort of third of the economy, which is that competitive global market-based producers. Mm-hmm. And that varies widely from area to area. And that's where we need to focus on. Certainly the needs of local small businesses are important, and we don't want to chase out our shoe stores and restaurants and hairdressers and such. But the area where that really makes a difference in competitive advantage and high wage jobs is that so-called traded sector third. And so my main message today is, as we look at different tax ideas, whether it's tax increases or tax incentives, that we listen to the needs of that very critical third of our economy. I didn't mention athletic apparel. But we'll get a pitch for that in just a moment here. Another critical sector to Oregon's economy. When the key question, I'm thankfully get to go after Joe because he got all the big questions, and I think you asked four or five of the big questions. What's most important? How do we, we have to balance our budget. We can't deficit spend. All those issues are just really the critical issues we're talking about. What's the trade-off between incenting business growth so you get high wage jobs, so at least under our current system, which is rest heavily on personal income taxes, a strategy that grows high wage jobs that then pay our high personal income tax, is not a bad strategy, because that's under our current structure, that's where we get our money. In our sector, we have roughly 75,000 jobs paying roughly $75,000 per person. And we have done some things in Oregon to incent the growth of the high-tech industry, and what we've gotten in exchange is thousands of high-paying jobs that pay our high personal income tax in Oregon. There's a lot of talk about stabilizing, diversifying that structure, and it's probably warranted. But the steps we have done over the last 10 to 15 years to diversify our economy and grow those high-wage, high-tax jobs has helped us. We've struggled a lot in the last couple of years, but we have to remember that, we were on quite a roll in this state because of efforts we did to focus on those traded sectors and ensure that they remain the sort of underpinning of our whole economy. Are taxes the most important issue for business, either in business growth or site location? I would argue, from the point of the high-tech industry, probably not. Are they important? Absolutely, yes. But other issues, as Joe outlined in his presentation, energy costs, wages, wage structure, cost of inputs, cost of land, the cost of regulation, all these things are also important. They all get thrown into the mix, as well as whether it's a good place to live and whether you have the amenities and the education structure so families would want to move here and send their kids to our, what I would say still, our great public schools in Oregon. All those are important. They all get in a mix, and I don't think anybody knows the secret answer as which is the most important and which tax is the most important. And of that long list of things that get factored into siting decisions, which is the predominant thing? It depends on the industry. There are some industries where energy cost alone, look at primary metals and aluminum industry, that's the definitive call. Everything else pales in consideration. You look at, we basically have no aluminum industry anymore. Part of it's global competition, for sure, but part of it is that one key input because it's so critical to that one sector. I think that's an outstanding example. I'm not sure you can find that one critical factor for others. Certainly, availability of land, and there's been a lot of talk of that in the last couple of years, particularly in the Portland metropolitan area. A major high-tech semiconductor fabrication facility will not, I will guarantee you right now, will not be built in the Portland metropolitan area unless something changes on availability of industrial land. There is not a site left in the Tri-County area for a new Intel or anyone else. There is not a piece of land to buy at any price.
Are there some buildings to rent?
Well, you don't rent semiconductor fabrication facilities. We got lots of room for software companies and people who just need flex space and a couple of desks and some cubicles and a few computers. And that part of the industry actually is growing. But the heavy manufacturing part, it's difficult. So, you know, there's a host of factors. And I'm certainly, you know, as the chairman said, if anybody in this room knew all these answers, we'd probably be doing something else. But I just want to close by talking about tax issues in sort of two buckets for your consideration as we go throughout the rest of the session. And I mentioned sort of macro issues. Macro issues, I think of the actual rate. Corporate excise tax is 6.6%. That's a macro issue, applies to everybody in the same way. There are other issues of corporate apportionment and throwback, the stuff you had such an exciting conversation about a couple days ago. While somewhat obscure in understanding, those are critical, big-ticket, high-level macro issues for businesses. And the second kind of pot is the more rifle-shot issues, the targeted issues, the things that incent specific behavior. Things like pollution control tax credits, R&D tax credits, enterprise zones. You know, we do a host of things where we try in a very specific targeted way to incent certain behavior and get certain results. So, you know, there are at least these two big pots that you'll have lots of conversation with over the coming months. And I think it's certainly appropriate to ask those tough questions, to say, if we did this, what do you expect to happen? Nobody knows the actual answers. If we changed this tax credit or lowered capital gains, how many jobs would it produce in Oregon? It's very difficult to come up with that kind of data and for us to sit up here and tell you exactly the results. And some of it, frankly, comes down to sending signals. Some of it comes down to perception, to a business community that says, you know, Oregon's willing to take a chance. You know, Oregon's going to go out, push the envelope a little bit on this incentive because they welcome us. And those words get around, and they get passed from company to company. And people say, here's a state that wants to be a player, and here's a state that wants to compete. And sometimes it comes down to sending those signals and those messages. When you can't have perfect data, you can't have perfect data on the revenue impact of a change or the job impact or the economic development impact, but they are noticed and they are taken into account by people who are looking either to expand, to stay, or to come to Oregon and do business here. So those are my high-level 10,000-foot observations, and be willing to answer any questions.
Very good. Paul, remember your comments and juxtaposed with Joe's before you bring to mind Phil Romero's testimony for the revenue options work group down in Eugene, where basically he talked about taxes as as part of the decision-making process on job investment and location. It really is dependent on the sectors, and I think I got a flavor of that from the way you two approached that, that in the manufacturing, where you're looking mostly outside the state for your business base and activities, it's different than the group of Main Street businesses that maybe Joe's group represents more predominantly. That makes it hard to target tax policy because it's hard to be precise. It was very, very interesting. And the other thing I would reflect on too, in your very good comments, Jim, is the kind of getting again at that balance issue. Manufacturing, high tech, bringing in the high wage jobs, and of course, we've heard, I think, from you and the industry before about how connected that is to, for instance, a university system. To get the high-wage jobs, you've got to be able to provide the high level of services and the workers, the workforce, to be able to support that kind of an industry. And that, again, gets back to that balance issue. How do we accommodate both?
Mr. Chair, just one final comment. I'm not sure anybody in this room or in this building or in this state has the secret bullet of if you do this, then our recovery will be guaranteed. I would caution, however, that you can you could send signals that would guarantee it would not recover. And so it's when we talk about balance, I mean, you could for instance, go to a business activity tax. For instance, just to pull something out of the air. I mean, a 50% tax on activity, whether or not a company is making profit, that'll guarantee a result. Just to make it an absurd sort of example here, there are things we could do to make sure recovery doesn't happen. I think on the doing things to make sure recovery does happen, it's more speculative. Just because ultimately, you know, our companies are not here because of Oregon's tax structure or amenities or Mount Hood or anything else. Companies are trying to make great products and compete in a vicious global marketplace and provide return on investment and return on capital. That's what business is all about. And we just need to remember that when we do this stuff. We need to be a little humble. I think sometimes on both sides of the aisle, a humble humility from us promising you things that will happen if you do such and such, and humility in legislative enactments that nobody has a silver bullet, but I guess you could have the silver bullet that could kill somebody. I'm not sure we have the silver bullet that would save us. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Farr.
Mr. Craven, if you do know what we could do to make sure recovery doesn't happen, please don't utter those words in Eugene.
Well, they'll do it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Farr, as you know some of our joint history together, I'm going to leave Eugene alone.
Well, let me go on down to Eugene then further. Representative Barnard, you had a question. Do you know?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I represent Central Lane in Linn County.
There you go.
Part of Eugene, a very small part of Eugene, actually. Representative Farr has a larger piece of Eugene than I do, by a bunch. I'm looking at a scenario that disturbs me a great deal, and I wonder if you have any thoughts about it. And it goes something like this. We are in a global marketplace. We are facing competition from all over the world. We are facing software engineers in India who get paid a tiny fraction of what people in the United States demand, for example. And we want to maintain a fairly high level of life for ourselves and for our children in terms of public services, schools, highways, and so forth. Do you see that there are ways that we can accomplish that second goal and at the same time maintain competitiveness worldwide? It seems to me that's sort of what this question kind of comes down to ultimately. Or are we inevitably on a rush to the bottom with these other economies, which is the scenario that some people would propose? And I don't believe that scenario, but I think we have to be very, very careful and intelligent in how we approach it to avoid having it appear that that's what's happening.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, that I would agree that is probably the critical issue facing the United States, not Oregon, not Idaho, but the United States of America. And how do you do that? How do you maintain a high standard of living in a global economy? The only answer I have to that is that you have to compete at the top. We cannot, as a nation, compete at the bottom. There are always going to be very hardworking people in other parts of this world who will work for less than us. And it's not just a matter of hardworking in the sense of people willing to push a shovel 14 hours a day. As you correctly point out, it's smart, hardworking people around this globe. It's countries like India that in a sort of perverse way has a very non-innovative economy, a non-entrepreneurial, a very heavily government-regulated economy that nevertheless invests enormously in education of its citizens to the extent that essentially India has an enormous brain drain. It has more smart people than it has an economy that can encourage them to stay there, and thus they flock here. And in this country, in the last 20 years, our graduation rates of electrical engineers, computer scientists, for instance, have declined 20%. In the middle of all the dot-com hoopla and Microsoft and Intel, and you'd think that kids would be flocking to an industry that provides huge opportunities, they have not. And we have partly absorbed the growth of our high-tech economy in Oregon by opening our doors to willing foreigners whose countries invest in their education but not in their economic growth. So the only answer I have in talking to my CEOs is to compete at the top, to compete at the level of innovation, at the level of new product development, because we can't compete at the bottom. But we think we can compete at the top. And that brings up things like our higher education investment strategy and whether or not we want to attract the kind of companies who want to compete at the top. And we've got tons of those type of companies here in Oregon, not just in the high-tech sector, but in the wood products sector and the agriculture and specialty agricultural products and specialty millwork companies and high-tech companies and great shoe companies and athletic apparel companies. We have got those kind of companies here in Oregon, and we have to say, that's where we got to compete, or we're not going to compete. So that's my attempt at an answer.
Representative Williams.
I guess I'm interested, Jim, to the point you've made, which I think has been, in my own mind, sort of a fascinating one with, as you pointed out, the dot-com hoopla and the amazing growth in that industry over the last 20 years, why we continue to have a declining interest, it would seem, on the part of American students generally, and particularly in Oregon, from going into these fields. I mean, you know, a huge population of really smart kids lives within rock-throwing distance of Intel. Why aren't they all getting their computer science or software engineering degrees, Jim, and going into the industry?
Mr. Chair, Representative Williams, some of them go to law school instead, but
he's talking about the smart ones.
Yeah, the smart ones. I'm sorry.
And Mr. Craven, I can tell you that there is every day of my life that I regret it. having worked for IBM and an IBM business partner before I went to law school, I honestly go back sometimes and think, the road not taken.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, gee, I could be living in my McMansion someplace having a lot more fun than being down here. So
particularly in the period of your life, if you had done it the right timing and gotten out at the right time.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a huge issue, and I've been asking smart people all over the United States the why on that. And, you know, the answers range from kids today don't want to work so hard or, you know, other kind of trivial. I have not seen someone who's been able to quantify that. But let me tell you about Oregon just real quickly.
Okay, and then I want to talk about this.
We are counter to that trend in Oregon. The investments that you as a body have made over the last 5 years in higher education in Oregon, our graduation rate of electrical engineers and computer scientists has gone up 36% in the last 5 years. And that's a direct result of intentional investment in infrastructure and a very like investment by the private sector. We've put about $120 million of new money into those technology fields at our state campuses over the last 5 years. Half of that's come from the private sector because they have said, you know, Oregon is actually serious about this. That 36% increase in 5 years bucks a national trend. There's less than 10 states where that trend is on the plus side, and we're one of them. So, you know, sometimes we need to applaud ourselves with all the gloom and doom in this state that we are doing some things right, and that's one of them.
Mr. Chair, if I could, Jim, is the reason that we're sort of on the plus side, though, is that because we had been so far on the downside that it took a little teeny bit of investment to turn small numbers around and argue that 36% is a great number, but if it's 36% and that means a dozen more people, I'm not sure that necessarily sends a signal that we ought to be laudatory for, and it's awfully tough for us to sit in this position, and I'll just, in my follow-up comment, when people can't tell us why it is that nationally we seem to lack an interest in this area, and so we're going to get beat out at the top by countries like India and others, where they seem to be, you know, overwhelmingly engaged on this matter. It is extremely difficult for us to structure a long-term policy to solve that problem if no one can tell us why the problem exists? I mean, so you can suggest to us that further investment in the programs would make a difference, but I bet you there's a lot more than 10 states in the last 5 years that have made substantial investments to their high-tech engineering-oriented issues at universities all over this country. And if they're not seeing a payoff from it, the question is: is that the answer to the problem? And if it is, what is?
Mr. Chair, Representative Williams, I think it is I didn't want to suggest that nobody has a clue about this issue. It is an issue of getting very serious in the whole continuum, particularly in the pipeline issue. It is encouraging young women to consider careers in what has been a male-dominated industry. It's incenting underrepresented minorities to consider that they could too become a computer scientist or electrical engineer. It's not just investing at the higher ed level and hoping the pipeline shows up. It's backing down that pipeline, and that's what we've also done in Oregon. I mean, we have worked at the middle school level. We've worked at the high school level. Our association has put 110 scholarships into play in the last 4 years, many of them targeted at underrepresented minorities and women. So it is it's getting serious and backing down the pipeline. It's supporting things like Saturday Academy and supporting things like the SMILE and MESA programs in our state system. Because you're right, you can't just throw a whole bunch of money at higher ed alone and hope kids will enter at the freshman year when they're 18 ready to be technologists, because that critical decision, most experts say, is formed around 5th, 6th, 7th grade. And I think the educators in this room probably know that you've got to get to those young women and those young men and those underrepresented minorities around the middle school area and tell them, take algebra in 8th grade, take calculus, take the AP calculus test while you're in high school, so you have that cohort ready to go when they're 18 and 19 years old. So it is, and maybe one could say that that's what the United States as a whole has not taken seriously enough, and realize it's a long-term pipeline issue, and you need to invest at many levels, not just at the higher ed level. So, and it, I mean, my answer is that in Oregon, we've seen that, we've done that, and we're seeing results. So it's possible to do. And again, your issue on percentages, you know, if you go from 1 to 2, that's 100%. The 36% is real in Oregon, and you look at what's going on at Portland State and Oregon State, big new engineering buildings, I mean, private sector investment. People are very serious about this, and we are making a difference. And maybe we can model behavior for the rest of the states to do the same thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I tell you, we could probably go on for hours with every one of you folks. This is a great discussion. I appreciate it, Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let's excuse Mr. Craven and circle back to Main Street and invite J.L. Wilson up.
Mr. Chair, our left-hand blinker seems to be on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, I'm J.L. Wilson, representing NFIB Oregon, with 12,000 employers in the state. Understand, when I come before you, our premise on tax issues is simply this, that the significant long-term increases in revenues that state government would like to see are probably only a function of private sector vitality. And when that vitality is restored, you'll get the revenues you need to be able to manage the state. And I think the salient question for the committee, at least from our point of view, is how will Oregon look on the heels of this recession relative to other states as a place to do business? Because I don't think there's any doubt that we're going to pull out of it. I don't think there's any doubt that all 49 other states are going to pull out. But the question is, how do we look comparatively as a place to do business as we all pull out of the recession? And obviously our revenue policy has some bearing on that. The state of business, Joe alluded to it in his testimony with AOI, but some observations that I'd make. And that is, while our economy tends to mirror that of the nation as a whole, there are some factors that tend to exaggerate our condition. Therefore, if the country is good, we're doing a little better. If the country is doing poor, we're doing just a little more poorly. And those factors right now that come into play, not only was it mentioned that we tend to put our eggs in one basket, which has the effect of when that sector of the economy contracts, you feel a disproportionate effect. I feel that in my membership because you have a disproportionate amount of the membership that tends to be supported by that economic sector. Fundamentally, our members have seen stagnant or declining sales over the past 2 years, dating back to the beginning of 2001. But the costs of business in Oregon have increased substantially. Some things you're aware of because they make the headlines, like tremendous costs in energy increases. Something that hasn't been talked about is liability cost increases, which impact people's ability even to be in business. The costs of health care have increased dramatically, affecting premiums. I'm not making a value judgment on this, but in this committee anyways, but a minimum wage increase, an unemployment tax increase, and even something that is completely beneath the surface and you might not even know exists, but is symbolic of a cost increase of doing business, which is something as little as a workers' comp premium assessment, which was increased 10% in the last year. So whether it's big-ticket items or small-ticket items, costs of business have increased across the board. Now, from our perspective, a couple of observations about the tax system. From our point of view, maybe it's because of the fear of the unknown, or maybe just because my members like the income tax, I don't know. But it seems to be that the income tax is favored among other forms of taxation for several reasons, because largely it's based on the ability to pay, which seems to be fair. It seems to have a fair application across economic sectors. That is, with gross receipts taxes, you'll obviously hear from the people who have large volumes of business but little profit margins. The income tax doesn't seem to affect people that way. And finally, and most importantly, it seems to provide an accurate account of how your constituents are doing economically. You feel that because tax revenues are down, you probably have a fair indication that your constituents are not faring as well economically, and it is a fair indication of that. And I caution the committee in the pursuit of tax stability, because from our point of view, it seems to be kind of elusive. That is, to the best of my knowledge, there are only two states who are not dealing with a budget crisis. One is Arkansas, and the other one, I should have looked it up after yesterday's testimony, but I didn't. Two states, one is Arkansas, I don't know the other, that are not dealing with budget crises. But my point is that they all have a mix of taxes, whether it's a B&O, whether it's a sales tax, payroll tax, or otherwise. You're seeing fluctuations in all those tax collections, just because the economy is down. So I stability is elusive, and I would just caution you against that. I think one of my board members talked to you about a statewide property tax when Eric Blackledge was here with the Governor's Small Business Coalition, because that does in fact seem to be the most stable form of taxation there is. From our perspective, in terms of tax priorities, they've been alluded to largely. I'd make a pitch for capital gains, not only because of the return on investment issues. I still believe that their business's return on investment or potential return on investment is still the primary factor of why they choose to do business in a particular place. That is where I come from on that issue. But as it is particular to a small business, as the 2002 biennial report of the Governor's Small Business Council notes, for many small business owners, their business is their primary asset and also their retirement fund. And the fact that you have a 9% tax on capital gains here in Oregon, while you could travel 30 minutes across the river and it's zero, that seems to be a little problematic. An issue that hasn't been talked about that I will bring up is the issue of the death tax, the estate tax, and why it's important to small business. Now, it has been posited that it only affects 2% of the people, the 2% of the richest Americans or richest Oregonians. And I'm here to tell you that that's primarily a small business issue. And here's why. 70% of family businesses don't make it through the second generation. 90% don't make it through the third. 9 out of 10 successors whose family businesses failed within 3 years of the death of the original owner cited the estate tax as one of the primary reasons why they went under. The reason why you can say that the death tax only affects 2% of the people, because it doesn't consider the vast amounts of business owners who divert resources, whether it's in the form of insurance policies or gifts of stock or other items, to be able to structure their business to avoid the tax. And what that amounts to is removal of productive resources that could be used to generate business, family assets that could be used productively into non-productive uses, which obviously has a bearing on the small business economy. So those are our two tax issues. I promised I'd be brief, so
that's good.
I'll end it here and ask questions.
Questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, we're going to pass.
Thank you. We talked about capital gains a couple of times, and I think it makes some economic development sense, but Paul, correct me, was there an OTM study on the capital gains legislation last year? What exactly are the, what does the data say
feedback
about feedback or what the positive economic benefits would be?
Representative Hans, we did do an analysis of Senate Bill 67, which we call from the 2001 session that was passed both houses but vetoed by the governor. What we did in our analysis is look at capital gains impacts really in two ways. One was to look at what we call a portfolio effect, in which you have an increased turnover of primarily stock that would occur because of the lower cost of realization. That most national studies have shown that's pretty powerful at the national level. We do see some of that, but at the state level it's relatively small, given that we have a 9% rate versus up to a 38% rate at the national level. And we did estimate that, and I can't remember the numbers, but I can get that for the committee in terms of what we estimate.
We'll have a chance to see it again this session. Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind that our revenue impact from that was quite a bit greater than it will be now, just because there's so much less capital gains than what we were assuming. So there is a portfolio effect, which does not have an economic effect in Oregon. That's merely a portfolio effect, but it would have a revenue impact, because when it's turned over, then there is a tax consequence. The bigger long-term economic effect is that there are two economic effects at the state level. One is, as JL pointed out, when you're looking at a long-term investment in physical capital, your net return is what OTM assumes drives your decision. So with a lower capital gains tax, you would have reduce the cost of capital, and you would have a net impact on investment in Oregon. The other effect is on the location of high income individuals, and that primarily takes place in Clark County versus the Tri-County area, where you have somebody about to make a big capital gain realization, and Revenue Department data does show there's some of that that goes on. The bigger effect, though, of an economic effect of a capital gains reduction is to increase the pool of saving. And at the state level, if you increase the pool of saving, that saving can be invested anywhere in the world, literally. So it doesn't necessarily affect the cost of capital in Oregon. So it does have a different national effect than it does at the state level. So all of those factors, and to various degrees of we try to account for all of those. And our feedback effect, as I recall, the economic feedback effect was around 10% in terms of its impact on revenue. We get bigger feedback effects when you look at something like direct investment tax credits that directly reduce the cost of capital in Oregon. So those are and that economic feedback effect is 15-16%.
We'll be looking in detail at several of these bills and proposals and get a chance to kind of look at the OTM analysis.
Mr. Chair, if I could
sure.
That's where I come when I look at the capital gains and you actually look at the data, the data at least don't show that it does meet some of these claims that it spurs more investment, in other words, that it pays for itself, at least not in a small state like Oregon, I think is what Paul's saying. Nationally, it has some arguable positive stimulative effects, but what I think that study showed, your analysis, is that in Oregon, there are better ways to get more bang for your buck in terms of economic stimulus.
Well, in terms of the economic feedback, I think that's true. Of course, you have a series of objectives and tax policy, but just in terms of the raw economic feedback, you do get a larger economic feedback from an investment tax credit or an R&D credit, for example, than you would from a capital gains tax cut. So those, if you're just using that as a single criterion.
Thank you.
Other questions for JL?
Jill, I had one, and again, this is your comments kind of spurred me to thinking a little bit. You talked about several factors in the last several years that have increased the cost of doing business in Oregon. I pay all these things as an employer myself, comp, and liability insurance, energy, all of those things. One thing, of course, that hasn't gone up in the last decade has been the income tax, for instance, as we have not increased tax as a business cost. And so I'm wondering, is this part of our problem here where we are, and you can't go to your energy company and say, you know, and lobby them for a lower, you know, a lower bill as effectively as, is this part of the problem that we're trying to address growth in business, the cost of doing business from several inputs? If we look at the income, you know, let's say a tax burden, reducing tax burden to offset those things. If you get where I'm going here, we're looking at reducing the tax burden to address the cost of doing business, when in fact it's not been the tax that's been driving the cost of doing business here in Oregon. And so is that where we're putting ourselves kind of out of balance? Do you know what I mean? It's hard to express here. We're reducing one cost, but in fact it's these other costs that are going up. And it's not this one.
If you're asking whether it's... you should manipulate tax policy to mitigate.
Well, that's it. The other costs of doing business, because they're very real. I mean, they absolutely are real.
Mr. Chair, I think one of the points that Jim made is I think that there's one thing you can do that would hurt the situation,
sure.
And I can't
course.
Guarantee you know if you had the opposite that it would help the situation. But I know what you can do to hurt the situation, and that is, you know, that's why our first real premise is to hold the line, you know, do no harm. Because sooner or later, you know, the business cycle happens. And, you know, it's been 20 years. It's been 20 years since something of this magnitude. And so I think, you know, people are shocked and dismayed, and you tend to lose focus that this is a natural evolution of the business cycle. And so I guess I would be a proponent of not doing anything rash.
Good stuff. Any other questions for JL or Representative Barnhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Craven posited an economy in which two-thirds of the economy is basically essentially local, if I understood him correctly, where we're doing basically the same things all over the country, and a lot of it is a local business. The other third is based on the particular situation in the state that you happen to be located in, and the ways in which that state can do a set of things better than other people can, for whatever sets of reasons. Where would you say your clients fall in that spectrum of businesses that he posits?
Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, I would say three quarters fall into the two thirds, and one quarter falls into the one third.
Right.
That's what my head spin does. Yeah. Okay, thank you, JL. Appreciate your comments. Let's bring up Dennis Peterson. Do you want to come up? With all these side references to athletic shoes and apparel.
Right. Well, appreciate Jim's
put a face on that sector.
Keeping us in mind as he makes his comments. My name is Dennis Peterson. I'm the chief tax officer for Nike. Here representing not only Nike, but a coalition of companies, the Smart Growth Coalition. It was formed a few years ago. We have about 10 core members, and this year we're looking to add a few more. So we'll be down here this session speaking with you on some tax issues, and appreciate the opportunity. Since my background is taxation, and in particular corporate taxation, I'm going to have to speak to those subjects I know about, because a lot of these things we're talking about are interesting, but I can't speak to some of these bigger issues, and I certainly don't have all the answers, that's for sure. But just taking Nike as the example, you know, we have about 5,000 employees here in Oregon, and it's certainly a success story of a company that started here and grew, and a company that has such deep roots that, you know, the company cares a lot about Oregon and is, you know, really loves Oregon. But at the same time, we'd like to have a little more company. You know, the trend has been that Oregon's been losing headquarter companies, and business has not been real strong, and that creates an environment that makes it more difficult for us, frankly, in a lot of ways, not only when we're trying to recruit employees. These days, if we try and recruit a manager-level person or so, you almost always have to look outside the state. And that hasn't always been the case. I mean, there's times when we could recruit from inside Oregon. It'd be good to get back to that so we can retain people and develop people inside the state. Would be a much better environment. And if we could, and I probably don't need to tell you all this, but I mean, if we could build businesses here, it just creates an environment that's more efficient, better for the community in just so many ways that I don't probably need to list. But the point is that having a strong business community is important, not only to keep it going, but obviously to raise tax revenue and take care of the state. What I would like to make just a few comments on, and we have some things maybe haven't been said yet today, but it's maybe not novel either, but I'd like to try and make the connection a little bit even closer to taxes to economic development, because I know that's what you're here to talk about. First of all, in my experience, there is a very direct and very definite connection. How I see it used kind of is in two ways. The one we've been talking about mostly this morning is tax as an incentive for business, and that certainly is one of them. We've seen states use it very effectively, like Texas and other states, that they structure their taxes in such a way that businesses just seem to flock there and thrive there. And Oregon can do better in this area. So taxes can be an incentive. The second way, and we haven't really talked much about that, we've kind of implied it, but taxes can also serve as a funding for business. For example, a tax credit. You know, if a company wants to begin a new research center or take on some new activity, if there were a tax credit or, you know, immediate expensing of capital improvements or whatever, that translates directly to cash to that business. So they can then say, okay, it economically makes sense to do that in Oregon because I'll get some cash back by way of taxes. It'll allow me to make these investments and so on. So there's the incentive and then there's the funding. So let's not lose sight of that, that it works both ways. I think what else I can add to this whole conversation, but like I say, as this discussion progresses, we'll come down with some specific proposals that we'd like to suggest and talk with you about. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative.
Yeah. You talked about barriers to employing high-level managers from getting them from within the state, or that you don't. And I assume this coalition, and I'm interested in who some of these other 10 high-profile members. I mean, I couldn't think of them off the top of my head, but if you give me a couple more. But what I'm really interested in, what are the barriers? Why not our students? What do you look at? What does it look like from you when you go to hire
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, I should have elaborated a little bit more on the coalition and some of what you're saying right here. Our core members of the coalition, in addition to Nike, we have Columbia Sportswear, Tektronix, Intel, Schnitzer, Louisiana Pacific. Those are some of the core members. And like I said, we're trying to add some others, and there's others that attend our meetings and give us input. So that's generally a little bit more about the coalition. On the recruiting, it's just it's the skill set you look for. If you're looking at a manager-level position, there often just aren't a lot of people with that skill set in Oregon already. So you need to look outside the state. At the lower levels, we do hire locally. That's primarily where we get our new employees, our local hires. But I'm just speaking, if you're looking at a higher level, often you need to look outside the state. I can speak to my particular case. I've got tax people, tax professionals under me, and a number of my managers have come from other Oregon companies, but a lot of those companies are no longer here. For example, I have a couple from Pacific Corp that now has changed their tax department dramatically since they've been acquired. I have other people from other companies. I've also had to recruit someone from Disney. So you bring in, you just need to get a pool of candidates, and often you have to look outside the state.
Follow up. Yes, sir. Thank you. Is there somebody or some place that's doing this better?
we've mentioned India in terms, and I've seen, and I for my own self think that one of the reasons that India is doing so well in this arena is that at their top level they are incredibly competitive. Mm-hmm. It's nothing but ability based. You better be good or you won't get an engineering degree at those top Indian institutions. You won't even get in until you're in the top 0.000%. And we don't do that very well in this country, I believe, incentivize our very top students to compete. Just flat out be the best and spend a lifetime on it. But that's not your problem. I guess what my question for you is, when you're out and your companies are out looking for the top level folks, is there some particular place you look, or do you pull from all over? And I'm asking this question to see what are other people doing in this, mm-hmm. and why are we not competing?
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Berger, I wish I could elaborate more on that. I see examples at Nike and I can relate to those, but again, it's kind of the skill set and the level of experience you're looking for that you just don't find a lot in Oregon. We need a bigger cluster of businesses headquartered here, because these are headquarter type functions. Sometimes they are specialist functions where you just might not have a specialty here, a designer or some of the high tech positions.
It's a clustering.
Yeah, a clustering would certainly help develop people. You can turn the tables too. When we're recruiting, one question, of course, people consider is, well, what do you have in Oregon, and what's my opportunities in Oregon? If it's only Nike at the bigger company level, that's pretty limited. They would feel more comfortable moving to Oregon if they could see several companies, so they could know that they would have opportunities to move within the, without having to move cities, to move within the state. So,
thank you.
Yeah. Representative Virgil.
Let's follow up a little bit on that. I find that very interesting, because can you enlighten us a little bit about when you are trying to get people to come to Oregon to work for your company, whether it's overseas, from overseas, or whether it's within the country, what kind of impediments do we have here? Do they not? In other words, how many people turn away from Oregon for mm-hmm. some reason?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Verdrake, Oregon has a lot going for it. The quality of life, the resources, it's a great state, and there's a lot going for it. So people, when you first mention Oregon, I think it's a very positive reaction. That often does come down to economics. They want the job opportunities and the... And so, like I was saying, if it's just Nike and there's not a lot of other larger companies here, they might... hit shy away. You asked about where we recruit from. If the higher the level you go, the broader the span is, and we'll recruit internationally for the top jobs. If you go down a couple steps in the manager level, you might just recruit in the Northwest, maybe just Bay Area, Seattle. Try and look in the West Coast. Again, this is out of my area, but just the stability of the state, the education, and all that. Certainly, people have families, they're concerned about the education of their children. So, when they see us closing schools, shortening the days in schools, that's a big negative. There's no doubt about that.
Did you have a
one sure. quick question. You said you have 5,000 employees in Oregon. Mm-hmm. How many do you have worldwide?
Roughly 25,000 worldwide. About 10,000 in the U.S., I believe.
All right, like everybody else, I think I could go on all morning, Dennis. Yep. I appreciate you coming down
Thank
and being with
much.
Us. I know we'll see you again during the course of the session.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. A chance to have you in front of us this morning. We have 17 minutes and two more. Let me bring up Lynn Lundquist and Duncan Wise, if you guys want to come up together. I understand you're not representing the same groups, but we'll get you here at the panel, and that might just kind of speed things along here. Maybe what we'll do is take both of your testimony and then open it up for questions for both of you at the same time. And, Lynn, if you want to go first.
Okay, Lynn Lundquist, Oregon Business Association. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I know you're not supposed to butter up the committees when you go testify for them, but as I look through the committee structure, and I say this in all sincerity, you have a great group of representatives on here that I believe look beyond just the myopic, if you will, presentation, and I appreciate that. I look forward to more sessions with you. First of all, I want to set the stage a little bit. I think we need to be really honest with ourselves, and that, yes, we're in a recession. First of all, this recession is nowhere near what we had in the 1980s. It's not even close. When you have 13.5% unemployment rate versus 7% today, when you have interest rates that are very, very low, beyond what at least I ever thought in my lifetime I'd ever see, contrasted with the 1980s where we had double-digit, I paid as high as 20% inflation, our interest rates, and that just is a killer. And so we have a completely different situation. I think we also need to recognize is that the states get trumped by the national and international situations. That's just reality. Now, we need to do everything we can within that framework, but if anyone thinks that Oregon is going to suddenly get out of the recession or not go into recession because we've done the right things, it isn't going to happen. And so I think you just need to put it in that context. I would JL's comment about not doing anything brash. I think the situation is we need to look where we can go. But I would agree with him that we need to be careful that we don't, you know, think we have to do something to suddenly spur us on. And without an infusion that we had in the 90s, for example, with high tech, that was the driver. If you have that kind of infusion again, perhaps we might see a growth pattern that might be somewhat close to that. Barring something like that, ladies and gentlemen, I just don't think it's going to happen. We don't believe that that's going to happen. We need to think, what can we do on a very solid foundation? I want to talk some specifics to start with and then get into the more global a little bit. Just in the area of economics, I think it's extremely important that we minimize the disincentives. I think that's extremely important. The message that we send to businesses, either within the state or from other states coming in. Before I, in trying to prepare for this a little bit today, I actually sent the question out to all of my members saying, I want to come down and testify for the revenue on economic development and revenue. And we have almost 10% reply, which is, I just blew me away. What that says is they're very, very concerned with this. Mm-hmm. But what they said, one from Eastern Oregon said, just take a few of the stones out of the path. You know, we're talking about regulation, permitting, that sort of thing. Don't go overboard, but just make the path just a little bit smoother, and we think that would really help. Another one said to incentivize for long-term capital spending. He made the comment that middle market businesses are treading water. They're not under the water. They're treading. That's good news because now they can come forth. But the fact of it is, if there's some way to do that, that would be certainly a positive. Capital gains. We support a very slow phasing out of capital gains, but only do that when that money is directly invested in Oregon. We think that's the first step to make. However small that might be, it may not be a lot, but we think that's the place to start, and then over the long term, we can go longer, and there's been other comments about that. Don't forget our international commerce. The dredging, I don't know if you're going to have to face that issue. I don't remember where that is, if you have to reallocate or reappropriate that money or not, but that is absolutely essential along with our airlines. The PERS investments, is it possible, and I ask this because I don't have exactly the total knowledge there, that we could make an emphasis to have more of that invested in development within Oregon? I believe the Treasurer is working on that to a certain extent. I think that would be important. I'm not talking about any huge things because I don't believe there are. Someone already mentioned, I want to emphasize again, this industrial land. One of our companies was looking, they're buying other companies and moving them to Oregon. Other states that these companies are moving from are coming to Oregon and going to this company and saying, why don't you move to our state instead of moving other people here? Let's move, you know, from Oregon to Virginia's back. And Virginia had an inventory of all the industrial land in the state so that they had sort of a ready market, and I think that's something perhaps that we could do. In rural Oregon, I believe the silver bullet is timber. I don't know of any other silver bullet. Now, I know how difficult that is, and it's, you know, when I when I was in your shoes and paid the big bucks, I didn't like those kind of comments because you're not really telling us how. But the fact of the matter, anything we can do, I believe if one thing we could do, if we could have a better collaborative effect between all the agencies that are working on timber health and watershed health and water quality. I think you're going to see a bill later in the session that talks about how we can bring some of that together, and I think that's a very positive positive move. Vigilant, extremely vigilant in your effort to maintain low-cost electricity. This region was founded on low-cost electricity. As that cost goes up, it's a bigger impediment than actually in an area where they already had higher costs to begin with, and we've already heard some about that. I come, as you know, from an agriculture. It's extremely. What I would say is, let's be careful on the deregulation. I would throw this out not as an absolute statement of fact, but I have been told that there's been nearly $100 million spent on deregulation, and so far there's been very minimal company movement within how they get their electricity. So let's be real careful about that, and in the short term, let's make sure that we don't do anything through fees or taxes that increase the operating costs of our electricity, because those will be passed on. There's just no other alternative. On areas that might require some money, I think your Economic Development Department must be, and I would say not only maintained, but I think if anything, if you can find, that ought to be enhanced this time. I think the greatest potential where it's going to create, it's going to take resources, and that's in the infrastructure of our transportation system. Oregon Business Association highly recommends leveraging the bonds in a very large magnitude. Having said that, we also believe we need to be concerned with maintenance so we don't have that go away, and we are our position is that we would like to see the gas tax remain as it is with an index that is capped on a CPI that gives it some longevity so that you will not all come back every session and have to fight that same issue of a gas tax.
Lynn, on that, just let me ask, is it remain as it is? So does that say your organization doesn't support an increase in the gas tax, that this becomes the foundation now and you want to index from this?
Index from there and use the registration fee increase on the bonding side.
Okay.
So we're trying to take a dual approach to that.
I didn't mean to get too much into specifics. Both of those probably when we get back, but I just wanted to get a sense of where you were there on that.
On the revenue side, starts to get here in a little bit in perhaps in the more 20,000-foot elevation. We believe absolutely long-term funding, stable funding, long-term state budget is absolutely essential. I don't think that we can go down the road and continue to have what we want without that happening. And we believe that that education is the foundation of that process. We do not believe we can grow our way out of this. When you look at the total picture of what we want Oregon to be, just visualize for a second. Throw into the blender the great growth rate of the 90s, measures 5, 47, 50, and 11. And what comes out of that, I do not believe, is a product that will sustain the kind of Oregon that we want. So I think it says we have to go beyond that. Mr. Chairman, I would like to read just take me about 1 minute. When I asked for this feedback, this is from a company, and I obviously won't give you the name, a large manufacturing company, a conservative manufacturing company, that, again, I put the question to him, what do you think about economic development and revenue? And he could be a little bit surprised. I'm going to read it. It may rankle a few people. But I think it says what people are thinking out there. So if you take it in that vein rather than necessarily any criticism.
You're saying don't kill the messenger.
Don't kill the messenger. He says, if I sit back and think about where manufacturing technology is going and consider the fact that we will never be in a position to compete on the basis of low-cost labor, the single most important issue that needs to be addressed is the broken system of funding education. The recent Oregonian article that described the relative plenty of the rural schools versus the hardship of the urban schools was a real eye-opener. Whether the rural areas like it or not, the health of this state is dependent upon the health of our major industries, which happen to be located in urban areas. It is totally irresponsible for the representatives of the rural areas to continue to pilfer tax money from the urban areas and perpetuate the current imbalance in educational resources. our industry, meaning his manufacturing industry, is going to transition from brain to brawn. Excuse me, from brawn to brain. I had it backwards. From brawn to brain. If we end up relocating due to a lack of brain, I can assure you it will not be a small move, but a very large move. I think what bothered me most about anything in the article was a sense that those who are benefiting from the imbalance in funding are taking such a parochial view. I grew up in a rural area, so I'm not anti-rural. I'm anti-myopia. I thought that was a very telling what's going on out there in the process. Then I'll take one quick shot here so we don't run out of time. In regard to your question, Mr. Chairman, that you asked originally, and Representative Haas's comments, I think, are tied into that. With this difficult issue that you have in regard to taxes, not deficit spending, growth, and so forth, let me say this. The Oregon Business Association would say you have to analyze that segment of your society that, if it's hurt, is the most difficult to turn around. We would say that is the education foundation of this state. Businesses are resilient. As someone said, these cycles come and go. If, in fact, what's happened in the national news is perpetuated and Portland loses from 85% of the kids going to public schools to 60-65%, I don't know how you turn that around. I think it's absolutely essential that we keep that as the foundation, and it's tied into what I just read to you. Here you have someone in manufacturing that's moving plants other places in the world, and yet is saying that's a foundation that we have to have. So in a nutshell, that's how I try to answer that question.
Thank you. Duncan, let's go to you. And you know, I tell you, if we go a little bit extra time today, that's okay. We've got a late start. You came down from Portland, and I want to...
Well, no, I can come back.
...honor your time. You know, go ahead.
Let me just be very brief.
No, that's all right. I want time for questions, too.
So. Okay. Well, let me just be very brief, but I will... I'm Duncan Wise. I'm president of the Oregon Business Council. Appreciate the opportunity. Really have appreciated the conversation this morning. This committee is... And a very interesting pivot point from my point of view. I mean, the revenue system can be viewed very narrowly in terms of the specific tax proposals you'll be hearing, but from our perspective at least, public finance is really at the juncture of the economy, public services, and the interconnections between all those. And the broadening of the conversation this morning, I think, is really reflective of the stakes that we're dealing with right now in this session. And so let me just briefly speak to that and give you our perspective about the connection between public finance system and the economy, and maybe some suggestions conceptually about how you might want to proceed this session. First of all, the connection between business economy and public finance, we see it as really a two-way connection. The first point we'd make, I think you've heard from everyone, is the best source of new revenue for public services is a strong, healthy economy. And I think you all agree with that. We know when the economy dives, we lose revenue. And it's a very important source. And so that everything we can do right now to generate more economic, activity is going to generate more revenue. And we have actually a plan you've got here of 12 different initiatives we think will make a difference to the economy. We need to get focused on a whole range of issues that will drive further revenue. But I also say, and this is very important, that, and we've got to recognize this, and you've heard this again this morning, the public services, the basic infrastructure that provided by public services are critical for the economy. And I don't think we can escape that. The point Representative Haas made about public schools and education, the closure of school days is going to affect the economy. And I don't, in terms of ability for Nike to recruit or some of the high-tech companies to recruit. And we need to recognize that. So we understand the tension. We understand the pressure that you're under right now in terms of trying to craft a path through this downturn. It is not a simple task. We don't pretend it is. We appreciate your challenge because those services do matter, and we've got to reflect that. Last year, of course, I know many of you participated, we did go through a process where we interviewed businesses and went through regional meetings to take a look at the future of Oregon's economy, and we put a report together, the Oregon Business Plan, called Stepping Up, and asked, where is the economy going? What is it going to take for us to be successful in the future, and what are the steps we need to take to build it? And again, I'm not going to run through the vision of the economy, the goals, high-wage jobs, the idea of leading-edge companies. Jim, I think Craven did a beautiful job in describing what we think the opportunity is in every sector. We want to be at the leading edge, the top end That's the only way we're going to compete, frankly, in the global economy to be successful. That's got to be our positioning strategy. And we think we've got the companies here to build on it, that is, to provide the R&D, the leading-edge products, the innovation, the capacity to be real globally competitive. But from my interviews and the discussions in the focus groups, it is not inevitable we will succeed in this game at all. It is going to be a ferocious 20 years in terms of building our clusters and building them in a way where we're going to be at the leading edge. We could easily sink down if we're not careful. And we came up with a four-point set of prescriptions. We call them the four P's on what we have to do. And it's the whole combination of things you've been hearing about this morning. It is pioneering innovation, which speaks to higher ed, technology transfer, capital access, and venture capital, and building strong clusters of industries in leading edge sectors. You've got to do that. And that's, you'll hear a lot this session about that. It is about education and workforce. You've got to have strong schools to attract people here, to produce the products, to produce the educated people that we need in our companies. That's critical. You can't do without it. It is about the place. It's got to be a quality place that when someone comes to visit Nike or anywhere else, they say, this is a place I'd like to live, and we have to pay attention. It's a huge competitive issue for the state. We happen, for example, to be pretty good right now in the Portland area at attracting 20 to 35-year-old workers, and that's a huge deal. College-educated, highly educated people. That's a big competition right now because that's a shrinking demographic group, and we have to be focused on what it's going to take to be successful in attracting the very talented people if we want to be in this game. And it is about productivity. It is about business costs. It's about all the costs we've just talked about. It's about infrastructure and transportation infrastructure that Lynn just mentioned. It's about all those things. And I think if you get your mind around this, we have to get holistic about this. We can't, you know, what I worry about is we tend to focus on one or the other. It's not. It's all of these things. And if we want to be world class, we've got to focus on all these. So then there's a fifth P. And we call it public finance, and it's what I described earlier. And you know, the fifth P is that really glues all this together. How do you create a public finance system that pays for the services you need and creates the right incentives for driving this kind of economy? And that's really your job. And I don't envy you in that job because it is a very tricky set of dynamics that you need to deal with. As we look at the public finance system, we did put together a white paper for the Oregon Business Plan, which I've passed out. And I will tell you, at the leadership summit and in the regional meetings, this issue came out overwhelmingly number one. I mean, it wasn't even close when people asked, what should be the number one issue for Oregon to focus on right now? It's fixing the public finance system. Not even close. And I think the reason for that is pretty obvious, because this is the pivot point for everything else we're trying to do in the state. So coming up with a public finance system that pays for the services we need, that is stable, that creates the right incentives for driving the economy is the job. And to deal with that, as we've looked at it, it's more than about tax structure alone. It really is the whole public budgeting system, because part of your problem in the tax structure is, frankly, the confidence in the public services themselves. And so our public finance vision is, first, we want stable funding to pay for the services we need, and we think, as we diagnose the system, that it is way too volatile. And we're experiencing that volatility right now. It is more volatile than other states because we have high reliance on income. Paul Warner, who is a treasure for our state in terms of resource, as a policy resource, but he's come before all of us and I think persuaded us that, in fact, what you've seen from Paul, I'm sure, as well, is that, you know, this is a very volatile system, highly reliant on one tax. It also, by being reliant on one tax, I think has some issues around economic incentives, which you could also talk about. But it's very volatile. And we don't have any safeguards against that volatility. I mean, we're really pleased that you put in a rainy day fund, and it's part of the special session. It's one of the great successes in the last year that we have a rainy day fund, but it was not enough. We didn't do it soon enough. And given the volatility, it's a huge problem with our public finances. But we also have other issues on the spending side, which we also acknowledge, and PERS as being number one, but other cost drivers also very important. And so we think we need to focus on those as well. So the recommendations we put forward were really a three-part set of recommendations on public finance. Number one, and I think you're all doing this, is fix PERS first. We don't think you can move on any public finance agenda until you deal with PERS, and for the reasons I don't think I need to say any more. We've really gotten focused in the last year, and we're really, and I think in the business community, that everyone's thrilled that you're taking this on, and it's just critical for everything else in terms of the costs and doing anything else. Second is really examining budgeting systems. We think that's again very important, looking at new ways to do the budget, and we have a whole series of recommendations. Again, we work with Paul during the interim between the special sessions on building a long-term budget system.
What interim?
We didn't get as far as we'd like because of the special sessions, but one of the visions is building a long-term budget vision both on the revenue side and on the budget side, so you can plan beyond one biennium. Second piece is develop performance measures for your budgets, and a lot of this work is going on. We think the business community should be involved with you and help you in every way we can to do that. And then the third is looking at the public finance system itself. And again, in our recommendation, we got a lot of play on it, but we said, you know, the Oregonian headline wasn't quite right. We said we should look at the sales tax, but what we said was that once you've done these things, looking at stability, looking at balance, looking at economic development, it will be time to take a hard look at the tax system. And one of the things we should put on the table is the sales tax is one way to balance the system. So put that on the table. And again, I think that needs to be in the mix as we go forward. We don't know the timing. We don't know when and where. The only other thing I'd say on this volatility issue is one that I think we're going to be hearing about this session is we know that we can't directly move the economy. You know, we can't pull ourselves out of the recession through stimulus at the state level. But that doesn't mean we can't do things. If you do some of the things on this list around transportation, permitting, and a number of other areas, if you all could get organized, and I think we all collectively could get organized to really deliver on some important work, I think it would make a difference to the economy. It's not going to turn it around, but it might speed things up. And that brings up the question for the 2003-05 revenue forecast. Because if you're wildly successful at doing this, the question is, as the economy grows, what's going to happen to the revenue, and how will that be captured and spent? One of the things I think we need to look at as we look at 2003-05, our chair has mentioned, is we may need to think about a banded forecast. Because what we want to do is set Oregon up now to be jump-starting the economy for 2003-05, and then if we're successful, we may need to think about having some of the budget reserved to spend, assuming we're at the high end of the forecast, to spend for additional investments to propel the economy long term. And so I'd encourage the Revenue Committee to think creatively, and I'm not presenting a specific proposal here, but to think about in this time as we're moving out of the recession, to really take a hard look about investments now and additional investments we might be able to make that would keep moving out of this period, so that we get well positioned for long-term prosperity and the vision we have as we go into the rest of the decade. So, very brief. I'm sorry,
no, too long.
And again, I'd be happy to come back. The only thing I'd finally say is, again, we do have 12 initiatives. We would love to network with you and find folks in the building who are interested in these, so that as we go forward, we know who our business folks should be meeting with to talk about everything from education to higher ed to land use and all those other issues. I think we got an opportunity to organize and work together to do a lot of work right now. Thank you.
Questions for either of these witnesses? You know, the one thing that you said it, and I think one or at least a couple of other witnesses mentioned jumps. You know, do things to jumpstart. And I guess that's this kind of gets back to the question that I asked before you came in, but. It's hard to jumpstart. I mean, you know, most of what we're talking about is not going to see an immediate return.
Right.
It'll have immediate costs,
right.
But it'll have long-term benefits. And that's the question, how we do that in a constitutionally constrained system where we have to balance the books at the end of each biennium.
I quick answer.
Okay.
Jumpstart packages that I think would make a difference. One, transportation. Get it done right away. We need transportation infrastructure. The sooner you get a transportation package out of here, the sooner you're going to have jobs, and that will generate more revenue next time. Tourism marketing. There is a study by, you know, you can take a look at it that suggests the money you put in tourism right now will pay off next biennium. Now, I know you've got a particular tax proposal, but, you know, there may well be money for economic development department around industrial land availability, giving them a good strategic reserve fund to work to get jobs now that will make a difference next biennium. And some of these aren't budget items. I mean, just focusing on the regulatory systems, focusing on, I would encourage you to go through the 12 initiatives and see if there are things you can do right now, put them in a package and say, let's move the economy. And let's get a package going. Frankly, psychologically, if not, it would make a difference, as well as I think substantively make a difference, to say, you know, we understand as a state that this is important. We understand revenue is the best way to, you know, the economy is the best way to bring in new revenue and create jobs, which is even more important. I think there could be a package here.
Yeah, I appreciate that response.
And I'd love to work with you.
Yeah. Representative Virger and then Representative Williams.
I just want to say that I really appreciate your approach to this, because if you and I own a company, and we're going to go in and we're going to hire some people and really jumpstart, and we're right there. And these are real live things I'm telling you about that are happening every day. And you say, well, that's fine. The only problem is you've got a little problem here that's going to take you 3 years and $100,000 to overcome it because of regulations. The company decides that they may talk to somebody else.
Right.
Duncan, you mentioned the transportation package. Have you guys in your package here picked a flavor of the various models that are being kicked around in the building?
We did. I mean, you can look at the package, but Mr. Chair, honestly, that I think from the point of view of the folks in the business plan, again, we had a broad group that was leading this. I mean, the details, you know, there's different variations on indexing. The basic point, and again, we have specifics in the plan, but I think what's important is, you know, we know bridge maintenance and repair, bonded money to do the bridge maintenance and repair. You can generate a lot of new money into the state, a lot of jobs. We know we need to do it for the infrastructure. Let's get moving. And again, the details, I mean, I know you have to work them out, and it's important to work them out, and we'd love to participate, but I think it's important to stay on the prize, the bigger prize here.
Representative Berger?
Yeah, I'll be brief. Mr. Chair, I was sure hoping these folks, smart as they are, would come in with a magic bullet. But I'm not disappointed because I think I saw one today. I think that there were themes that were repeated often enough that it began to sink in, and some greater strategies will come out of this, and I just would like to thank them all.
This has been an excellent discussion today. Representative Burns?
I want to thank you as well. I think that the specifics that I've heard in the last few minutes are encouraging to me in terms of trying to focus on things. And especially the very last point you made on bridge maintenance, there are three bridges on Interstate 5 in Lane County that are being weight limited as we speak, and we are in big trouble, and it's happening faster, I think, than some people thought it was going to. So we can do two things at the same time, and that is stimulate the economy and maintain our interstate highway system,
which is important for the long-term economy. Yeah.
All right. I appreciate it for all the folks that came today. I think it is absolutely clear to us that our futures are inextricably connected, private and public sector, and we need to work together. I appreciate your willingness to come down and spend time with us today. We will invite you back as welcome participants through the remainder of the session and expect to see you here. With that committee, we are adjourned until Monday at 8:30 a.m. Thank you.